Tonight is the third Sunday of the month, and we'll be taking steps 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 with Paul Fisher. Welcome to the Beginner's Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous Group. In this Big Book 12-step meeting, we follow the directions in the Big Book and take all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1 month. We take the 12 steps at the group level as an overview. If you want to take the 12 steps on a one-to-one basis, please connect with a sharing partner after the meeting ends tonight. A sharing partner is someone who has taken all 12 steps and has had a spiritual awakening and is willing to help the new person through the 12 steps. We are recreating the beginner's classes in the early 1940s when recovery from alcoholism was over 75%. In Cleveland, there were 4 beginner's classes with a 93% sobriety rate. Our AA pioneers took 12 steps fast. Beginner's Big Book provides sharing partners for this meeting only. They can work with you on a one-to-one basis to take all 12 steps and be recovered from alcoholism. Any men or women who want to take the 12 steps, please connect with a sharing partner after the meeting ends. Will the sharing partners who want to work with others please raise your hand? Thank you. We have Big Book study guidebooks available to use in the meeting. Each page and paragraph is numbered. Please do not write in the book. Big Book study guidebooks are for sale at group cost of $8. Please silence your cell phones and please no texting. All court papers will be signed after the meeting is over, after we have said the Lord's Prayer. Please keep your court paper until then. Sometimes this meeting runs over 1 hour. Do not expect to have your court paper signed at 7:30 or if you have to leave early. Again, all court papers will be signed after we had said the Lord's Prayer. Please keep your court paper until then, and we'll sign it after the meeting is over. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Here's a quote from our AA co-founder, Bill Wilson, written in the 1958 AA Grapevine. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps, is the sole purpose of an AA group. End quote. Let's have a moment of quiet time to invite the God of our own understanding into our hearts and remind ourselves why we are here tonight, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. We'll be passing the basket at this time for the Summit Tradition. Please go to page 76, paragraph 1. Page 76, paragraph 1 for step 6.
Then the author say, if, big word, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Do you know what indispensable means? It means I can't live without it. In other words, my willingness is indispensable. Here comes a question. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? That which is objectionable is that which blocks me from God. When I'm blocked from God, I'm blocked from you. So let's ask that question of ourselves. Are you now ready to let God? See, I have to be willing to let God remove them. So if there's something that I want you to take, let's say I have this bottle of water up here. Let's say I want you to take this bottle of water, and I bring it to you, and I hand it to you, and you grab a hold of it, but I don't let go. You could be stronger than me. You could be more powerful than me. You could be bigger than me. But if I'm not willing to let go of that bottle, you can't remove it. So you see, step 6 is about getting ready. The 6th step is preparing us to ask God to remove it. So that's all we're doing in step 6, is getting ready. Then another question. Can he now take them all, every one? Ask that question. Can he take them all? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. There's a prayer. If you have some resistance, we ask God. The authors even give us a clue that step 6 is about getting ready. In the very next paragraph, they say, when ready. So I have to make sure I'm ready. Okay, so am I ready? Okay, let's move on to step 7. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me. Good and bad. Not some of me. Not the worst parts, not the majority of me, but all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. This is the reason we need to be specific about what we're asking God to remove. My own experience is that if I'm not specific and I don't know literally what it is I'm asking him to remove, he can't remove it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he will remove it, because I'm not God. I don't know when he's going to remove it. My job is just simply to identify specifically what I want him to remove. You notice that my name isn't anywhere in these 2 paragraphs? It's not in there, is it? So you see, I'm not working on my defects. You ever heard that? Yes, I'm working on my defects of character. Certainly. If you hear me saying I'm working on my defects, really what I'm saying is I'm going to embellish them. The more I work on my defects, the worse they get. That doesn't mean I don't make a conscious effort to be honest, sincere, helpful, willing, thoughtful. Sure, go ahead and make an effort in those areas. You see, these steps are paradoxical. I don't remove the defects. I simply do the work and leave the results to the God of my understanding. So you see, it's impossible for me to work on my defects if I'm applying these spiritual principles. Okay, let's see who's ready to do 6 and 7. And what I'm going to ask is that we read the 7-step prayer out loud together. So those of you that are willing to do so, and you feel that you are ready to let God remove all these things that have blocked you from him, Let's go ahead and say the seven-step prayer together. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Congratulations. Let's move on to steps 8 and 9. Let's turn back to page 59. Let's read those steps. Page 59. Let's go down to step 8, where it says, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Okay, back here on page 76, paragraph 3. Back here on page 76, paragraph 3. Notice what the authors immediately say after we've taken the seventh step. They say, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. Wow. Do you see what they're saying? If you haven't burned your fourth step, you already have your amends list completed. It says it right there. It says we have it. It doesn't say we construct or develop a list. It says, we have a list. So you see, if I'm doing the inventory as outlined in this book, I already have a list. It says, we made it when we took inventory. It's already there. They go on to say, we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So if I'm going to go out and repair means to mend or restore. To mend or restore. In other words, I'm going to attempt to mend or restore the damage that I have caused. Okay, page 77. Third line from the top of the page. Page 77, third line from the top of the page. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Here the authors are telling me what my real purpose in life is. Not my purpose in AA, but my purpose in life. It doesn't say to be of maximum service. It says to fit ourselves to be of maximum service. In other words, I have purpose and meaning for life today. I didn't have that when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no sense of purpose. I had no sense of meaning for life. Life didn't have any meaning. I thought it was over. Now I have purpose. Wow. From that line, let's go down seven lines. Go down seven lines from where we just read. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. That means I'm going to attempt to right the wrong. In order to do that, it's going to be necessary for me to ask, what can I do to right the wrong? Because that's why I'm there. Let's go to the next paragraph. Next paragraph, line 4. Next paragraph, line 4. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, We take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. The experience that comes to mind is the word arrogance kept coming up in my inventories, and I finally faced the reality that in order to be free from that, it was necessary for me to go back and make amends to every single person I knew in AA that had been affected by my arrogance. And I did not want to do that. I still don't like making amends. I make them because I want to be free. So I hemmed and hawed, and there was this one person in AA who I felt didn't really deserve my amends because he was much more arrogant than me. So I went ahead and humbled myself, and I went to the guy and admitted I was wrong in treating him the way that I had and that my arrogance had caused him harm. And when I got to the part of the amends where I asked, is there anything I can do to right this with you? And he responded with, nah, watching you grovel was enough for me. You see, but by that time, I ended up laughing right along with him. You see, it's important for us to not take ourselves too seriously. And I'll tell you why it's essential that we not take ourselves too serious. And that's because we are the joke. I'm the joke. You won't have that experience if you don't do these steps. Okay. Last paragraph on page 77. Last paragraph on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. I'm not there to talk about them. I'm not there to talk about their wrongs. When I go out to make an amend, I'm there to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to make an amend. So if you're going to make an amend, and then when you get done, you think, okay, now there's something I need to share with you. Okay, now I got the amend out of the way, and I share that with you. And then I turn to the person and say, oh, by the way, there's some feelings I need to share with you. Or I need to confront you about some behavior of yours. I can guarantee you it will dilute the amend. Because that's not what it says here. See, I'm there to sweep off my side of the street. You see, it doesn't matter how people respond. It does not matter whether they accept or reject the amend. I'm there for one reason only, to clean up my side of the street so I can be clean and I can be right with my God and I can be right with you. So you see, it doesn't matter if you reject my amend. It does not matter. That's not why I'm there. I'm not doing it there to please you, to maintain your friendship, to get you to like me, to give me some strokes, pat me on the back. I can tell you what will happen when our motives aren't clear. My wife did something to me one day, and I resented it. And I felt she owed me an amend. And I instantly recognized that I needed to make her an amend as well. So I decided, well, if I go make an amend to her, she'll make one to me, right? So I go to her and I make this poetic amend. And I go to her and I make this amend, and she doesn't say anything. So then I walk off, pissed off. I mean, I humbled myself. What kind of a program is she working? She didn't make amends to me. And then it hit me that my motives were dishonest. Oh, my God, now I got to go back and make amends for the way I made amends. Now, keep in mind, at this time, I had no expectations of amends from her because I was clear. about the motives for making that amends. So I went back to her and made amends for the way I made amends. And as soon as I got done, she says, oh, yeah, by the way, I have an amend I'd like to make to you. Page 78, paragraph 2. Page 78, paragraph 2. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go. For we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. So here the authors are telling us, it's okay to let the person know that you're a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you've been slow to pay. An experience that comes to mind is I committed an armed robbery when I was drinking, and there were two of us involved in it. Now, the question is, am I entitled to go back to that Taco Bell and tell them my crime partner's name? Not according to what the authors instruct. So I was asked that inevitable question by my sponsor. How free do you want to be? I don't know if I want to be that free. What happened was I had the money in hand and I went back to the Taco Bell. And I walked in, and of course, the management had changed. And I walked in, and I let them know who I was. Hi, my name is Paul Fisher. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in order for me to stay sober, it's essential that I go back and I correct all the wrongs that I've committed. By the way, I didn't mention my crime partner's name, because the truth was, I did commit the crime. I robbed your store, and I believe this is the amount of money that I took, and I handed him the money. His first reaction was, you know, I could call the police. I said, I'm aware of that. He said, I don't believe you're doing this. Why are you here? So I reiterated one more time, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in order for me to stay sober, it's essential that I right all the wrongs that I've committed. Otherwise, I won't stay sober. So I just can't believe, I've never heard of such a thing. Do all you people do this? I wasn't going to answer that question. Because I'm a spokesman for AA. Anywhere I go, I'm a spokesman for AA. I asked him if there was anything else I could do. He said, no, this is fine. This is great. And I'm a free man today. See, that doesn't hang over my head anymore. Okay, page 79. Page 79, paragraph 1. Page 79, paragraph 1. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Notice that the authors say that these take innumerable forms. There are a lot of creative ways we can make amends. Working with a sponsor who has experience in going through these steps repeatedly, who has experience with making amends, sponsors can be very creative. There was a group of people that I owed money to in another state. And it was a large four-figure amount of money. So what I did was I wrote a letter, general service delivery, in that town, hoping to contact these people. Because I didn't know how to find them. And I didn't get a response, so I felt, well, I'm done with that one. You know, if the opportunity presents itself, I'll make that amend. And I took that back to my sponsor, and he said, well, let's hold on a minute. And then he asked that question. He said, how free do you want to be? I hate it. Whenever he starts any conversation with, how free do you want to be, I knew something is in store that I'm not going to like. It's not going to suit my ego. So he asked the question. I said, yeah, I'm willing to go to any length. He said, by the way, when you took that money, do those people belong to the same universe that you do? I said, yeah. He said, so not only did you take money from those people, you took money from our universe, didn't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, you willing to pay it back? And I said, yeah. He said, okay, this is what we're going to do. He said, every time you go to a meeting and the seventh tradition basket comes around, you're going to put at least a $10 or $20 bill in there. And you're not allowed to let anybody see you do it, and you're not allowed to tell anyone. I'll tell you, man, that was really hard. Because that basket came around, I wanted to snap that $20 bill, and I wanted everybody to know what a generous little AA I was being. Can you see how generous I look here? I'm putting a $20 bill in there. I'm so big-hearted. And it was difficult. So what I did was I maintained a written record of the amount of money until it was paid off. He instructed me not to tell anybody for 5 years. So for the first 5 years of sobriety, I couldn't tell a soul about that. So you see, sponsors can be very creative. A couple of other examples. I sponsor a guy who committed cruelty to animals. What he did is he went to an animal shelter and did some volunteer work. Another guy was cruel to women. He ended up going back to a woman's shelter and doing some volunteer work. Just recently, I sponsored a guy, and I had him go to a woman that I selected and to sit down with her because this person had committed harm to a number of nameless women. He didn't know their names. So I had him sit down with this woman and make the amends to her. So you see, there are a lot of creative ways that we can make amends. Okay, page 79, paragraph 2. Page 79, paragraph 2. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. In other words, we need to be considerate of who may be affected by this. That's why in step 9 it says, make direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So I need to consider that. Is this amend going to cause more harm? If so, I do not make that amend directly to that person. In other words, I'm not allowed to go back and make amends to someone at their expense just so I can relieve myself of my own guilt and shame. Okay, page 80. Page 80, paragraph 1. Page 80, paragraph 1. Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, these are the instructions. If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, ask God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. So I need to consider, are other people going to be affected? For example, I'm married. I need to make a financial amend. There's an ideal payment arrangement in my head. I need to sit down with my wife and go over it with her. You know, there's a financial amend I need to make. How's that going to affect our budget? So you see, I wasn't entitled to mention my crime partner's name when I made that amend. Because I'm not there to satisfy myself at the expense of someone else. So here the authors are giving us specific instructions. We've obtained permission. We've consulted with others. In other words, I'm not out there running on my own doing this. In other words, I'm going to check it out with my sponsor. Okay. Paragraph 4 on page 80. Paragraph 4. Line 4. Page 80, paragraph 4, line 4. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would soon start drinking again. See, I'm there to do God's work. This is part of God's work. When I made that decision in step 3, to turn my will and life over to the care of God as understanding, simply means I'm going to do God's work. What does that mean? That means I'm going to go out and clear up the wreckage of my past and present, if you have any, so I can be free, so I can be of service to other people. And I'm going to place the outcome in God's hands. I didn't know what was going to happen when I went back to that Taco Bell. I didn't know. I didn't know what was going to happen as a result of putting that money in the basket. All I know is it was necessary for me to place the outcome in God's hands. There was another amendment I made years after the fact where I owed a music store a bunch of money for some equipment that I had bought on the installment plan, which I'd never paid for. Now, at the time I committed the harm, they didn't have computers. I called the music store, identified myself. Hi, my name's Paul Fisher. I'm a sober member of AA, blah, 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 blah. And the guy asked, well, when was this? And I gave him the estimated year. He said, hold on a minute. He put me on hold for 15, 20 minutes. He came back and he said, we can't find any record. I said, are you sure? I said, I'm certain that I owe you this money. So he put me on hold again for 10 more minutes. Come to find out, he ended up going up to the attic. And they have these little index cards where they maintain their records for the money that people owed them. And he came back on the phone the second time. He said, I don't believe you're making this call. Why are you doing this? This makes nobody has ever done this. Why are you doing this? I reiterated to him, I'm a sober alcoholic today in AA, and if I don't make this amend, I'm not going to stay sober. And then he asked me, well, how much money would you like? Well, how do you want to handle it? I said, well, I can afford to send you X amount of dollars a month. Would that be, that'll be fine with us. That'd be great. It happened as a result of going to them in a humble and forgiving spirit, as the authors have instructed us to do in this chapter. Not one time in the entire time I've been sober have I heard an unreasonable request, providing that my motives were clear and pure and that I approached them in a humble, forgiving spirit. Okay. Let's turn to page 82. Page 82, paragraph 2. Page 82, paragraph 2. Line 2. Second line in that paragraph. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Without an exception, every single person I have known in the rooms of AA who have gotten sober and who have drank again. And I've known people who have come into these rooms, went through the steps, pray every day, work with newcomers, go down to LARC, do H&I work, etc., etc., and they drink again. And without exception, they all have one thing in common, and it has nothing to do with they stop going to meetings. Because I've seen a lot of people through the years drink again who go to meetings on a regular basis. What they had in common was they did not finish their amends. See, an ironic thing happens to me in these rooms. I start to develop a thing called a conscience. My threshold for pain today is lower than it was when I was new. What I mean by that is I can't tolerate the guilt and the shame and regret with dishonesty today like I used to be able to. I can't get away with the things that I couldn't get away with before. And today it's even worse. So I've developed a conscience. Now, if I'm a real alcoholic and I'm engaged in dishonest conduct and I haven't completed all my amends, I'm probably going to drink again. Why? Because I'm a real alcoholic. I can only stand the pain for so long. I'm going to have to medicate it. Top of page 83. Paragraph 1, page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. Notice it doesn't say we kick back and wait for the person to come to us. We take the lead. So if there's somebody that you've committed a harm towards here in the valley, make contact. You take the lead. That's what I must do. I must take the lead. I've heard many times, well, I think I'll just make that amend on the phone. My question is, did you commit the harm over the phone? Did you commit the harm in person? That may mean I may need to get on that plane and go back to Philadelphia, to Chicago, to L.A. to make that amend. Earlier in this chapter, we heard about gaining consent. And that's what I was taught to do. So when I need to make an amend and I see you at the meeting, I'm not going to go up to you and say, come here, I have an amend I need to make. No, I'm going to gain your consent. That means I'm going to go to you and I'm going to let you know. There's an amend I'd like to make. Are you open to hearing it? The person may say no. I've had that experience. I've heard the person say, no, I'm not open to hearing it. Does that mean I need to go back and make the amend at a later time? No, because I made the effort, providing that I feel genuinely sorry for what I've done. So I'm going to ask for their consent. Then I'm going to ask them, if they say yes or open to hearing it, I'm going to ask them one of three questions. If I'm speaking to the person on the phone, because that's the only way I can reach them, I'm going to leave a message. And this is what I did on this one particular incident. I called the person up, and I had wounded this woman deeply. Not once, but several times. I had betrayed her. So I sensed that she probably wasn't too willing to hear from me anytime soon. So what I did was I waited for the dust to settle. That's why it's important to have a sponsor who's had experience with making these amends. There are times that we can go back and make amends prematurely, too soon. That's why I need spiritual guidance. So what I did was I left a message on her voicemail. I let her know what I was about to do. I had an amend I'd like to make. I'd like to know if she was open to it. And then I asked her these three questions. Would you rather hear it over the phone? Would you like to receive it in writing? Or would you prefer to meet in person? She called back, left a message on my voicemail, thanked me for the amend, thanked me for the growth that I was experiencing, and said, I would prefer to receive it in writing. And that's what I did, and it's a done deal. So keep that in mind. We're there to gain consent first. We're not there to demand anything. Page 83, paragraph 2. Page 83, paragraph 2. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I'm living this program. I'm not doing it. I'm not working the steps anymore. Consider living the steps in your life rather than trying to work them. Next paragraph on the same page. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter, and there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. There are some people we can't contact. What I do is I have this little file at home with a little card in there with the person's name and the harm. And in the event that that person presents themselves, then I'm willing to make that amend. Next paragraph. These are the 9th step promises. These are not the 12 promises. Some alcoholic came up with that idea. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, what phase? The phase of making amends. Check this out. We will be amazed before we're halfway through. So we're going to be amazed before we are halfway through making our amends. They're not saying before we're halfway through the steps. In other words, I'm not going to experience these promises when I'm at step six. Look at where this paragraph is. It's contained within the ninth step of the book. And here are the promises. This is what you will experience before you're halfway through, if you're willing to go to any length to be free from alcoholism. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Wow. New freedom. Freedom like you've never experienced before. Happiness, not happiness, new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So in order for me to experience these promises, I have to be willing to take the action. The guys that I sponsor absolutely amaze me. Absolutely amaze me. That is one of the gifts in having gone through the steps and sponsoring other people and watching the gift of sobriety and God's grace and the freedom when we take these actions. The experience that comes to mind is that I sponsor a guy who has harmed black people. So I meet him in a coffee shop and we're going over his ninth step list. And there happens to be a black guy sitting in the restaurant. And I ask the guy, are you willing to go to any length to have a spiritual experience? He said, yeah. I said, come on, let's go. I said, where are we going? So we go over and we sit down with this black gentleman. We introduce ourselves. We explain to him what this person is about to do. The guy's sitting there with his elderly grandmother. We sit down, and the guy goes through the spiel, you know. He identifies his name, lets him know that he's a sober member of AA, and that he's harmed a lot of black people through the years. And then he says, I was wrong, and that he was truly sorry. And then he asks, what can I do to right this? In the meantime, his grandmother has a smile from ear to ear. So here are four people having a spiritual experience. Not one, but all four of us. He got to the part of the end where he asked, what can I do to right this? And the guy responded with, well, God has already forgiven you, and I've forgiven you. What a wonderful experience. Chances are that that gentleman never heard an amen from a white guy before in that manner. It was a healing experience. And he walked away a free man. And I walked away a free man. And I walked away with some gratitude, and my cup was full because I got to sit and witness the miracle of making amends. And I'm here to tell you from personal experience, you will have those kinds of experiences if you're willing to go to any length. The question is, how free do you want to be? I'd like to show you how not to make an amend and show you how to properly make an amend. First, I'd like to share with you, as instructed in the book, these are the things we are going to say when we make amends. The thing I love about this chapter is that the authors tell us what to say, what not to say, when to do it, when not to do it. So you see, when I make amends, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to gain consent. I'm going to ask the person if they're open to hearing it. Depending on the circumstances, I will ask how they would like to hear it. in person, on the phone, in writing. If it's right there in person, I'm going to ask if they're open to hearing it now. The first thing I'm going to share with them is the wrong, what I did. Then I'm going to say, I was wrong. It's okay to say, I'm sorry. It's not okay for me to simply say, I'm sorry. An apology is not an amend. An amend is an attempt to right the wrong. That means I'm going to ask a question. And the question is there anything I can do to right this with you? Okay, now I'm going to show you how not to make an amend. Let's say my friend Jeffrey here, let's say I called him a name. Let's say I called him an asshole. I know some of you may have a different perspective on this one. But okay, here's how not to make it. Hey, Jeff, come here. I got an amend I need to make to you. Hey, I'm really sorry the other day I called you an asshole, but you know I was having a really difficult time, you know, at this time in my life. You know, I'm in therapy right now, and I'm working on my family of origin, and all these mother issues, and all these father issues are coming up, you know, and I just wasn't myself. You know, I didn't get enough sleep the other night because I had to work really late, you know, and I had to take my cat to the veterinarian, you know, and, man, I was really upset about that. And, you know, I'm just really sorry for doing that. A couple of things, a couple of guidelines to consider. Number one, we do not offer reasons for our conduct. We do not offer explanations or excuses for it. We do not share our feelings. That is not the purpose of making amends. Here is the proper way of making an amend. Jeffrey, I have an amend I'd like to make to you. Are you open to hearing it?
Yes, sir.
The other day I called you an asshole, and I'm truly sorry. I was wrong for doing that. You don't deserve to be talked to in that way. And I'd like to know if there's anything I can do to right that with you. I'm willing to do that. So he says, please don't do it again. That means I have to be willing to follow through. Once again, not one time in the entire 20 years I've been sober have I heard an unreasonable request when I followed the outline as instructed in this book. When I make that amend, I'm not going to shift into another dialogue with him and say something like, by the way, I have some feelings I need to share with you about what you said to me the other night. No, if I have something like that to deal with, I'm going to do it at another time, but I'm not going to do it then. This is what I like to call the freedom step, because that's what step 9 does. It frees me up. It frees me up to be able to walk down the street with my head up high, with some dignity and some integrity. Because I'm free. These things can no longer block me from God. Now, the thing I've discovered about amends is that I don't like making them. I still do not like making them. You don't have to like it. That's why I'm a lot more careful today when I speak to people. Not because I'm a nice guy. Because I don't want to make amends later. Now, this is what I was taught to do. You can take it or leave it. What I do is I go out and I get myself some 3x5 index cards. Or you can get a small pocket tablet like this one. I go back to my inventory, and each person gets one card. So if I've harmed John 3 different ways, John doesn't get 3 cards. John gets one card. I put the person's name on it, and then I list the harm, specifically listing the harm. My amends work is no longer guesswork. I don't have to sit there and try to remember. Let's see, did I make that amend? Do I owe that person an amend? See, it's all in writing. I make that amend, I throw that card away. I'm done with that amend. Another thing I like to do after doing my inventories, I like to sit down and go through my Rolodex at home or my address book. Because I will find that I have harmed people along the way that did not show up in my inventory and add them to the list. Why do I do this? Because I want to be free. I don't want to be blocked anymore. See, if I'm blocked, I'm not going to stay sober. That's the bottom line. If I'm blocked, I'm not going to stay sober. If I'm blocked, I'm not going to stay spiritually fit, and I'm not going to be able to be of maximum service to God in you. That's the reason I continue making amends. So, what I'm encouraging you to do this week is to start making your amends. Remember, we don't have to make all the amends at one time. We don't wait until we're done with all our amends and then move on to step 10. We start making our amends and we immediately move into step 10. Let's turn to page 59. Step 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Okay, let's move to page 84, where step 10 begins. We're going to go to page 84, paragraph 2. That's page 84, paragraph 2, where the authors say, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. So, if I'm actively making my amends, this is what I will experience. I will have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. What I find beautiful about this paragraph is that the author has given me specific instructions on how to do a daily 10 step. If you look back at the beginning of this paragraph, it says, we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. No mention of at the end of the day when I retire, but as I go along. In other words, a 10 step is something I'm going to practice during the day. And the authors give us specific instructions here. They show us how to carry out four spiritual practices. The first one is watch. If you go down eight lines in that paragraph, it says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Have you ever been to the mall and people watch? Or go to the park and you people watch? You don't interact with those people. You simply observe. That's what watching means. If you want to have a new experience, try practicing watching for a mere 30 days. Simply watch you. That doesn't mean I analyze what I do. I'm just simply observing. So I'm watching for four things. And then the authors instruct me what to do when this occurs. It says, when these crop up, we ask, that's a prayer. We ask God at once to remove them. So if they crop up, at once I'm going to ask God to remove them. Immediately following, it says we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. That means I'm going to discuss it with somebody that day before I go to bed. And it also says, and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. So you see, I have this spot check that the inventory I can do during the day where I can make amends immediately. Then it goes on to say, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. So isn't that beautiful? We have four spiritual practices that we can do during the day. Watch, ask, discuss, and turn. Now what we have in the next paragraph are called the 10-step promises. Now this is providing that I've done everything up to this point. Meaning, I've had a first step experience. I found a power greater than me. I made a decision to give my life to that God. I did an inventory, shared it with another person, took the exact nature of my wrongs to God in 6 and 7, compiled my harm list from my inventory, began making my amends, and began practicing the 10 step during the day. Check out the magnitude of these guarantees as we read on. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Wow. Would you like to be able to stop fighting anything or anyone? Does that sound cool or what? For by this time, sanity will have returned. I am guaranteed to experience what the author's experienced. That has been my personal experience. I've also had the experience of not experiencing these promises when I go up to the work. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely normally. Wow. React sanely normally. That's so foreign to me. And when we will find that this has happened, check this out. And we will find that this has happened automatically. It doesn't say that I'm making it happen. We will see that our new attitude, there's that word again, new. New attitude. Not attitude, but new attitude. That means different than it was before. Poor liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. In other words, I'm not making it happen. All I'm simply doing is I'm just simply doing the footwork. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Am I in a position of neutrality? Do I feel safe and protected? We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. Then they go on to tell us that is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. They're giving us a little checklist. It has been my experience, personally, as well as observing people I've worked with through the years in these rooms, that there's fundamentally only one reason why I will drink again. That's because I'm not in fit spiritual condition. If I am in fit spiritual condition, it is impossible for me to drink. My God will not let it happen. Ask yourself, well, how am I going to know if I'm fit spiritual condition? They just got through telling us. This is how we react. So I have a little checklist. Let's see if I'm in fit spiritual condition. I go back and I start reading the beginning of that paragraph. Have I ceased fighting anything or anyone? Or am I getting into arguments with people all the time? Getting into debates? Getting on a crusade? Got to convince you this is the way you got to do the program. It says, for this time, Sandy, will has Sandy returned? Are you seldom interested in liquor and attempted? Have you been able to recoil from it as from a hot flame? Are you reacting sanely normally? It says we're not fighting it. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Now, if I am truly spiritually fit, and if I am truly in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, you know what that means? That means you cannot harm me. If I'm in a position of neutrality, saying, how are you going to hurt me? What are you going to do? Steal my truck? Go ahead and take it. God's just going to give me another one. You want my money? Follow me. Follow me outside of the meeting, you know, where it's dark. And I go up to my truck and pull out a knife and a gun and say, I want your money. I say, okay, here. Take it. Why? Because I'm safe and protected. God's just going to give me more. I can go anywhere. I've been to places that people have told me not to go. Let's take it to the extreme. Let's say you get really resentful at me and you decide you want to kill me. Bring it on. I'm just going to a better place. That's what being safe and protected means. It means I'm no longer living in fear. That doesn't mean I don't experience fear. I'm not driven by fear anymore. Because I've become clear as a result of following the recipe in this book that I'm a spiritual being with a human condition. Which means I'm going to have human reactions. I'm going to experience sadness, grief, anger, disappointment, so on and so forth. But that's natural and normal for me. Next paragraph. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Here the authors are emphasizing that this is about action. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is so full. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of will. Here the authors are clearly explaining to me, to conform my will with God's is the proper use of the will. Check it out. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. What line? Thy will be done, not mine. So to conform my will with his, it says it is the proper use of the will. I'm supposed to use my will, provided I'm spiritually fit, provided that I'm having a spiritual experience, provided that I've done the previous 10 steps. So I'm supposed to use my will. We're not a bunch of automatons. I'm supposed to use my brain. God gave me brains for a reason. Okay, on step 10, back there on page 84 in the second paragraph, where it says that we suggest that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go on. Those of you that are willing to practice a daily 10th step, why don't you go ahead and recite that out loud with me? Starting with the second line in the second paragraph on page 84. So paragraph 2, second line, page 84. Ready? We continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Congratulations. All right, we've completed step 10.
Beginner's Big Book provides sharing partners for this meeting only. They can work with you on a one-to-one basis to take all 12 steps and be recovered from alcoholism. Any men or women who want to take the 12 steps, please connect with a sharing partner. Will the sharing partners who want to work with others, please raise your hand. Thank you. In honor of our AA pioneers and the old tradition, we'll simply stand without holding hands and close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer.